Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. I'm JB. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, if indeed you are subscribing. If you're not, I suggest you do so immediately. You can find out more about what I do by following at Rugby Podcast, which is the Egg Chasers, me, Tim and Phil, bringing you rugby content every Sunday without fail. I've been doing so for 6 years and hopefully will be doing so for many more years to come. You can find this podcast at the Rugby Dungeon, or you can find me on Twitter at Jay Beardmore. And if you really want to know what I get up to away from rugby podcasting, you can go and look on the company website, Beardmore & Co. Independent Financial Advisors, and see what I get up to there as well, if it so takes your fancy. Enough of that, because now I have one of the most exciting players on the pitch and one of the most entertaining to observe off the pitch too. It's the incredible Courtney Laws. How are you?
I'm very good, my friend. I'm very good. A little bit tired. The twins are up early today, so.
Have you got twins?
Yeah, we've got four. The oldest is six. Teddy's five, and then we've got twin boys who are like 2.5. So they're an absolute nightmare.
I was going to say absolute nightmare. Any rugby potential yet?
I think so. That all the lads are pretty. They're very tall. Teddy's pretty skinny like I was, but the twins are big old units. But they've all got good hand eye, and they like a bit of rough and tumble. So
yeah, nice. So you say you're tired today. Is it a day off for you? I say day off, obviously, with four kids. It's never a day off, is it?
Yeah, so day at work today. No, yeah, I'm not in the club. We train Monday, Tuesday, and then we get Wednesdays off. Train Thursday, Friday, and then we kids off at the minute.
Now, the obvious question, of course, is with lockdown and all the awful stuff going on with COVID, how's the fitness? Are you keeping in shape? Are you ready to go? Should the whistle blow tomorrow?
Probably not yet. Not quite. But I'm getting back there. I mean, I didn't do much over the lockdown period. I just kind of tried to keep my weight up and keep my weights going, as in keep my strength up and stuff like that, because that's the main thing that takes me a while to get back when I come back to training and stuff. Whereas my fitness, I'm never really too far off with my fitness. So came back in, I did a few fitness sessions before I went back in, and I was pretty sweet, pretty good to go.
So I'm sorry about this. It is horrifically rugby nausea. But so what kind of weight do you walk around at when you're not training for rugby, or when you're not doing weight? What do you sort of go down to?
So if I didn't start playing, well, I suppose it depends what you mean. If I didn't do any weights at all and I was just like a normal guy working 9 to 5 or whatnot, I'd probably be around 105 kegs, I'd imagine.
Okay.
Be relatively skinny. But walking around, I walk around about 116, 117.
Crikey.
Yeah, and I still look pretty skinny there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you do operate in the land of giants, so.
Exactly.
What kind of stuff do you do to sort of keep on the bulk?
Well, I love my cooking, so I'm keeping weight on pretty easy now. Every Sunday I'll cook 3 or 4 kind of big batches of meals and then freeze them up. It's just so, you know, if you're ever struggling to cook, or you're late home from training or whatnot, you can just throw something straight in the microwave and have it there and then. So but yeah, I just generally eat everything, like try and get as many calories as I can.
Yeah, I was chatting to the chefs at Sail Sharks, and they were saying for one of the type of props there, they're aiming for about 5,000 calories a day. And since I've started counting calories, I'm like, that's a hell of a lot of food.
Yeah, it is. I've been counting my calories in terms of training. I've been wearing my Apple Watch and seeing how much, because I'd never done it before. I thought it'd be quite interesting, but we're burning, in terms of like one fitness session, we're doing burning about 1,500 calories.
In one fitness session? How long does that last?
It was about an hour, the last one.
Crikey. So, you know, obviously I'm only running up and down a field with some level 8 rugby players, socially distant, of course, but I've been measuring mine on my Garmin and we're lucky to crack 600.
Really?
Yeah. Let alone 1,000 plus.
Yeah, we do. It's been pretty tough since we got back, to be fair.
So, well, I've been doing bits of research around you. One of the things I found out absolutely fascinating is this. Well, I say small club. I'm sure they wouldn't want to be called small. Northampton Old Scouts. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, Old Scouts. They're just a local club. So I went to Northampton School for Boys.
Yeah,
and I started playing rugby when I was about I was 13, nearly 14. And I played for a year with Northampton, with Northampton School for Boys. And then a lot of my friends played down the road. It's literally a couple of hundred metres down the road is Northampton Old Scouts.
Yeah.
And they've had quite a few people come through, like Ben Cohen played down there, Steve Thompson. So they've had some good players come through that club. So I went down there and really enjoyed it. A lot of my friends are down there.
That's absolutely incredible. So I didn't actually realise that your roots were so Northampton based. I mean, you literally played all, not only your professional rugby there, but schoolboy rugby and junior club rugby too.
Yeah. My mum and dad moved. So my mum was born in Northampton and my dad was born in Jamaica. I was born in London and they were living there until I was four. And then we moved to Northampton. I've been here ever since.
I see. So were you playing with any lads in junior rugby which you're still playing with now at Saints, or is it all just turned over?
Not in terms of, not in Northampton School for Boys or even Scouts. To be fair, we had an unbelievable team. We got to, I think we got knocked out in the semi-final of the Daily Mail Cup. And we got the furthest out of any state school. Like, we were really good. We had about 14 players that played for East Midlands.
Amazing.
In our school team. And then about 13 that played for Old Scouts as well. So we had a really good team. But I don't know. It just didn't work out for a few boys, injuries and stuff like that. I ended up being the only one.
It's amazing that. Because almost every player that I speak to who's played junior club rugby, there's always someone in there in that team who like either better them or as good as them, and for whatever reason it is, it just doesn't quite pan out.
Yeah, we had a lot of really good players. There was a guy called Brad Heber George who was a big old black dude on the wing, just used to score tries for fun, and that was playing for Northampton for the Wanderers at 16. Me and him were playing at 16, and it just didn't quite work out for him. I could almost have guaranteed that it'd have been a good player if he'd kept on with it.
Don't suppose you know where he is now?
No, I don't. I still speak to quite a lot of my friends from school, but I don't know what Brad's up to be honest.
Is it quite nice being the local lad playing in your local club, or do you sometimes feel that it'd be nicer to be out of the Goldfish Bowl or have nipped over to France or whatnot?
I don't think too much about it. I mean, I like going to shops and then like people will see you and it's nice to have a conversation with new people and stuff like that. So I'm always like willing to talk and chat to people about rugby and stuff.
Yeah.
Or whatever really. So I quite enjoy it, and it's not like they're not crazy fans. I mean, rugby's not like
it's not like
NFL. Yeah. So it's not like I'm flipping Kanye West and they're going to, just try and jump you for photos the entire time. But people just generally want to have a conversation with you, and I find that quite nice.
What's the most frequent question that you're asked when you're out and about?
Not to do with rugby. Obviously, how tall I am is probably the most frequent question I get. But, well, obviously, the past few weeks when I've been out, they've just been asking me when the season's going to start and stuff, and telling me they're season holders and all that. So many fans in Northampton, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is pretty much a rugby town. I guess you're getting a lot different attitude from the fans, a lot different questions now than you were, say, 2 years ago.
Yeah, probably. I mean, actually, I don't know, but the game's changing, isn't it? And I think that the fans are kind of changing with it. I feel like fans are quite knowledgeable now in terms of their rugby.
Yeah.
And they'll ask you quite technical questions and stuff like that. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
I suppose it makes a change from how tall are you. Do you know what I mean? So.
I tell you what, you're right on that, because I think I know quite a lot about rugby, but the more I talk to players who are in the game and coaches, sort of the more I realise that I don't know. I think it's a case of, you know about rugby when you realise how much you don't know about rugby.
Yeah, certainly. It's one of them. It's like life, isn't it? Like, I feel like I'm just about clever enough to know how stupid I am. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I completely agree with that, because I am phenomenally stupid, and I think it's only recently I've realised, you know, like exactly the same. I can't possibly have thought that when I was 25, and yet I did.
No. Yeah. Exactly.
So just in terms of you playing then, coming up through the ranks and stuff, were you always a second row? Because I kind of look at you and your body shape and think, you know, second row, sure, but, you know, often, you know, six or, well, basically six or back row or something.
Yeah, I was, when did I start? I started off playing flanker when I went to Northampton School for Boys, and then I went to wing for a few seasons.
How were
and
you on then the wing?
Yeah, I was all right, mate. I was pretty decent. I was still quite skinny when I was in school. I didn't put on weight until I really got to Saints. I was decent, a decent winger. Used to always fly out the line trying to smoke someone, but let in a few tries that way. But never mind, it was fun. Anyway, yeah, I was a decent winger, and then I kind of just kept growing. So they put me in the second row. And then obviously now I just switch between second row and back row.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the smashing people, because I guess you know what I'm going to ask next. But in my mind, watching you play, and I've watched you play for as long as I can remember now, you've always hit hard, but for some reason there was something extra awful about when you played alongside I was going to say Sammy Manoa, but then I want to say Manu Samoa, but that's the country, isn't it?
Sammy Manoa. Sammy's one of my, he's like quite inspirational, I think, for me, just because we share such a similar like outlook on life and attitude and personality, really. Like, he's just a really American version of me, I think.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed playing with him, and he was one of the best players I think I've ever played with, definitely. And we always used to just kind of have a season-long competition and who could take the most names kind of thing.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I did see some similarities in the way that you played, but I didn't realise it was direct competition. But thinking about it, you'd be silly not to.
Yeah, it's just a bit of fun. Like, it wasn't anything serious, but it was good.
Who won?
I think Samu's... I don't really know, actually. I think Samu's hits a bigger, and especially on bigger people. Like, he's just a bigger man, more powerful. But I think I'll probably be the more prolific hitter.
Yeah. Are you aware that there are like bloggers and whatnot out there who have actually written like whole, I wouldn't quite say they're as long as essays, but certainly articles just about your style of hitting?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, it was christened a few years ago, like the elbow hit, because the claim was you target the elbows in order to dislodge the ball. And I don't know if you do it purposely or not, but I was looking at, you know, the case that they presented, and it's pretty compelling, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily aim for the elbow, but I guess I do try and hit around that kind of height, because you're not in danger of hitting them in the head when you're that low, but you can still... you're still high enough to knock them backwards, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's still a pretty good place to hit in terms of leverage.
So, completely by coincidence, last week I was interviewing Ryan Lamb. And yeah. Ryan Lamb's theory was...
Lammy.
Yeah, exactly. Great guy. Very, very good interview, I've got to say. The guy can talk for ages and ages and ages, which is perfect for me.
Yeah,
and he was saying that your main thing, or the main thing that he found with it was it would just put him off his game, or that, or that's the idea, to put you under his, and it's not so much the hit itself, but the pressure and the threat of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it can make quite a bit of difference kind of subconsciously to tens that are maybe a bit worried about it, just because I can put pressure on that way. Like, I've got good time in that way, and obviously you don't really want to be on the end of it kind of thing. So I'd hope that I could make a difference that way.
Yeah. Are there any sort of hints and tips that you would give? Because from my, the thing which I find utterly astounding is they never see it coming.
I think it's because I'm normal. Like, if ever I've done a big hit on a 10 kind of thing, I've been kind of coming round the breakdown at the time. So they're concentrating on the pass. And then when they've got the ball, obviously they're concentrated on where they're going to deliver it.
Yeah.
And in the meanwhile, I've come around the ruck and taken timing off the nine, and I've not stopped, so I can just continue.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what I mean? Continue my kind of arc into the 10. And it also means that, you know, you haven't got to accelerate off the line. You just carry on running kind of thing.
That's interesting.
Which is good for my long legs.
You're getting all of your cues off the nine then. So when he's released the ball, you are following.
Yeah, exactly.
Brutal.
Exactly. And then if you can time it right, which I've managed, it's not easy, and I haven't done it really that much. If you talk about a kind of 13-year career, but when you do time it right, you can get some decent hits.
Well, I mean, you say you haven't done it much. I mean, I guess 13-year career, you only need to do it twice a season, and you've got one hell of a highlights video.
Yeah, true.
It is weird. I mean, I find it weird that, you know, of the things which excite me the most as a fan of the game, watching those hits would be definitely one of them. And I think it's strange the way that rugby always seems to be in a phase now where we're going away from embracing that sort of physicality. If anything, it's almost a little bit frowned upon.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? But I think that's, you've got to follow the money, right? So
okay.
People don't want their children to be on the end of that kind of physicality.
no one wants to be on the end of that.
Exactly. And to get more money into the game, you've got to get more people into the game in terms of rugby players, and then more fans. But I think that in order to try and entice people to play rugby, they want to make it less physical, so more people will be more inclined to play it. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. I mean, the logic is pretty sound. I would just ask you this. Imagine a 12-year-old Courtney Laws. Would you be wanting to play rugby because of the, you know, the big hits and the excitement and everything else, or because someone told you it was a game of skill and evasion?
No, I completely agree with you, and I don't think it's necessarily the best way to go about it, but that's the logic that I've come to from why everything's going in this direction. And I guess safety is very important, of course. So things they're doing around HIA and stuff like that is quite good, but it's difficult because rugby is such such a kind of intricate game. And if somebody's ducking the head into you, and the only thing you can tackle is, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to move out of the way so you don't hit them in the head, or are you going to tackle them so you can tackle them? But do you know what I mean? It's quite difficult. Well, it makes the game more difficult.
I guess the point I would make on that is every time that you make it a bit easier, you open the door for players that are maybe not as talented as the ones that they're replacing. Again, I'll go back to what I was talking to Lammy about, and it was again about the hits, and we were kind of saying that, you know, if you outlawed the big hits, you know, there's less pressure, well, then lesser fly halves could play, because the secret to being a great fly half is operating under that pressure.
No, you're bang on, mate. I agree with you. I think the game is what it is. It's a physical game, and it should always be a physical game, and it's not for the faint of heart. And if you want to play it, then you've got to be tough. Do you know what I mean? So,
Have you noticed it getting more physical of late?
Yes.
In what way? Just describe that for me.
Just the athletes are better, mate. And it's not like now where you're a 21-year-old. So way back when, if you're 21 years old, you never played rugby before. If you're a decent kind of athlete, you could just pick it up and get on with it.
Yeah.
And you could be a decent player. Nowadays, kids are literally being almost bred to be good at rugby. Like they're from you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, they are being trained on how to be a good rugby player and a good athlete. And, you know, it means that you've just got better athletes, more powerful, bigger, stronger, faster men in the game.
Yeah, and I wonder if an element of that is just the knowledge which is available now. I mean, if you're a young man, say you're 18, you've got nothing to do other than play rugby, and you want to play rugby and you want to eat clean and work out, there's so much information out there. I mean, you go on YouTube for half an hour.
100%. Information, equipment, you know, yeah, like I said, knowledge of conditioners, coaches, everything. So, and then obviously, just because it's a competitive sport, everybody wants to be fitter and better and bigger and stronger. So, yeah, it's just the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just on that, I mean, I've been lucky enough to be following Sale for a while. I do, I'm lucky enough to go and see him train occasionally. And, you know, just to sort of prove your point there, the Curry boys seem to have literally been bred to do nothing but rugby. And they seem to get bigger and bigger every time I see them.
Yeah, they're an interesting couple of lads, but they're very good rugby players.
Yeah, quite. So now that you're a more senior guy around the Northampton team, well, I say the more senior guy, probably the senior guy. What kind of advice do you dish out to the young lads, if at all?
To be fair, I generally take quite a lot of the skills sessions. Mm. So I'll be helping, well, myself and all the players in terms of what we want in certain situations, like ball carrying and obviously tackling in terms of defensive structure and tackle technique and tackle choice. There's lots of little things that go into it, but because I've obviously got a lot of experience, I've got a lot to offer in terms of what I think is best in certain scenarios.
That's amazing. So, hang on, did I hear that right? You said that you take some of the skill sessions.
Yeah, not in terms of group. So we'll do. It's called individual skills, whereby we'll. It's not like I'll take the whole rugby session or anything like that, but we'll break it down into groups, and then if I'm in a group, then I'll generally decide what we do and what skills we're going to practice and stuff.
That's really interesting. So how often do Northampton break down into groups, and, you know, like what are the size of groups, that kind of thing?
So you choose what basically you want to work on, and then you'll ask people if they want to kind of do it with you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's basically a player led thing anyway. And I'll generally do ball carrying, A shape stuff, just different shapes and stuff like that. So, it's probably just because I'm the oldest one there that I generally try to run it.
That's quite decentralized in terms of leadership. I don't think that I've heard of that before.
No, yeah, we do it. We do it at England. And do we do it at England? No, not as much at England. It's more, definitely more at Saints, but it's probably about once or twice a week we'll do individual skill sessions. Well, they say individual, but it's individual. You decide what you want to do, basically, and then you do it as a group.
Oh, nice. So what are the main differences around Northampton now? Because I think you've been under Chris Boyd. It can't have been 2 years already. It probably has been, actually.
I think it might have been 2 years, yeah. Well, it'd be two seasons at the end of the season.
Yeah, because obviously you made the playoffs last year, which was quite a surprise to a lot of people, including myself. You're going well this year. Something has happened there in that transition.
Yeah, I think we've had a bit of a change of... Well, we've obviously had a big change of staff and a bit of a change of direction. I think that Bessie's done really well in terms of attacking and just making sure that we're all on the same page. And that's one of the biggest things in rugby. It's not necessarily, even if you've got the best strategy or kind of team structure. It's more if you're just all pulling in the same direction. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if everyone's on the same page, it's much easier to play off that hymn sheet.
Was there any sense of anxiety or what? And anxiety is not the right word, but nervousness, I guess. When I mean, Jim Allender was there for a long, long time. Sorry, just before I continue that question, did you play with him in the championship, or were you a bit after that?
Yeah, that was my first season.
Awesome. That is awesome. We'll talk about that in a second then. but then that transition to a different coach, because you know, I guess if he's got different ideas about the players he wants and whatnot, it's a bit destabilising for everyone.
Do you mean personally?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't worried personally because I don't know. I just don't really worry about things like that. And I'd heard Boydie's a good dude and stuff. So, you know, if he didn't like me, then what can you do about it? You just got to get on with it, haven't you?
Yeah.
But no, I wouldn't say I was kind of anxious about it, but we did need to change. Things had gotten slightly complacent and we weren't moving forward. So, and it happens, do you know what I mean? In rugby, and you have teams have ups and downs and throughout season. So, it was good that we had the change and we certainly needed it.
Yeah. Now, one of the things which I always like about Northampton, I say one of the things I always like about Northampton as if it's the entire club. I'm mostly thinking about Tom Wood here. But I was lucky enough to interview him, actually, and Jamie Gibson too. And it just strikes me that all you boys have got a load of outside interests. I mean, Tom Wood's talking about taking 12 lads to welding classes and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, there's not loads to do around Northampton, so people generally go and find their own little hobbies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you've got your club as the base, and your family, and obviously it's a really big family orientated club, and that's really good. So a lot of the wives and stuff hang out together, and the kids and stuff are good friends. So that's really good. But outside of that, yeah, pretty much everyone's got their own little hobbies, whether it's gaming or woodwork, or you know, anything. So yeah, it's quite cool.
Have you watched Jamal Ford Robinson's gaming podcast yet? It's a podcast, but it's also on YouTube.
No, I haven't seen it actually. I will check that out because Jamal's a funny guy, man.
He's great, isn't he? Yeah. For most clubs, it's sort of the boys finish training and then it's coffee with the lads. But with you guys, it's all sorts of weird stuff.
No, we've definitely got a coffee club. There's boys that do really love the coffee. We've got a few good golfers, a lot of gamers. We've got a hell of a lot of gamers at our club. But it's basically all the young lads that are gamers, and then all the old boys are like family men. And then do other bits like coffee and woodwork and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I tell you what, those young lads that are into gaming, I used to mock them, but now I know the amount of money involved in gaming, I think they should be
making
money.
We'll have a new generation of kids who, you know, when they would have potentially been sportsmen, they'll want to be like e-sportsmen or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be mental.
I can't say that you're wrong there. I mean, I think there's a stadium in, is it California? Where it holds like 20,000 people to watch people game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of watching people game on YouTube and stuff like that. There's tons of money in it.
Yeah, maybe we're part of the old guard.
I think we are, mate. I think we are. They said e-gamers will earn more than the best e-gamers will learn a lot more than the best rugby players, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I found out something incredible the other day, that racing teams are actually handing out contracts now, not to people who have bothered going racing, but people who have actually bothered doing sim racing.
Yeah, it's
astounding.
Yeah. It must be incredibly accurate then, the sim racing, if that's the case, you know what I mean? It must be very similar.
Well, probably more similar than, say, if I happen to get very good at John Lomu rugby and showed up at Saints training.
Yeah, certainly, yeah, definitely.
Just tell me about your experience in the championship, because you know, you've been an elite player for as long as you can remember, I guess. That must be the last time you played anything else other than top-level rugby.
Yeah, I mean, it was my first season, so I was 18. I got my debut against Isha, but I had a pretty rough season with injuries. What did I do that year? I think I broke my leg. I think, and I definitely broke my jaw towards the end of the season. But yeah, that was, I had three games that season for Saints. So I didn't have much involvement, but yeah.
Oh, what a shame, because I don't know what it was like to play in that league, but I have a very romantic image of, you know, the Saints coming down there, actually enjoying themselves, going back up, reinvented under Jim Mallander, and then, you know, eventually ending up in the title.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the boys definitely enjoyed that year, even going down to Cornwall and that. They had a really good time, and it's obviously good to just rock out and win every week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's from the Northampton side. I mean, from, you know, if you're a lad in Cornwall, it must have been bloody brilliant to play against Carlos Spencer or whoever is on the roster then.
Definitely. Ashy, that was Ashy's first season as well.
Was it really?
Yeah, Chris Ashton, yeah.
Now, just changing completely, you went over to Japan for the World Cup. Just tell me a little bit about your time there, and would you ever be interested in playing there should the opportunity arise, having experienced it firsthand?
Mate, I actually loved it. I thought it was amazing. It wasn't the first time I've been there, because I went there with the under-20s for the World Cup. But it was the first time I've really experienced Japan, because when you're, I was 19 at the time, and you got no money, and you've got no, and you know what I mean? You're basically just stuck in a hotel when I was younger. But this time, yeah, we went there. I thought it was amazing. Really good experience. Lovely people. Had some amazing food out there. Yeah. Some really good times.
What are the sort of things that you did on your downtime? Because, of course, you're out there for a good 4 or 5 weeks, I'd guess.
2 months, pretty much.
Two months, of course.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time with the lads. Spent a lot of time going and getting nice food, good sushis and Wagyu steaks and stuff like that. Yeah. Pretty expensive, but worth it.
The RFU food bill must have been a nightmare.
They wouldn't pay for no Wagyu steaks, mate. That was honest. but I actually took my... So I dusted my PlayStation off for that tour, because I knew we were going to have a lot of downtime. So I spent a lot of time just playing PlayStation.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I guess at some point you've just got to switch off and do something boring.
Yeah, mate, it was honestly nice to just Sundays just mong out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was out there for basically the group game, so I went to watch you guys against USA. Was the France game cancelled? It was. I don't even remember, because it all sort of blurred into one. We had no downtime.
Yeah, it really did.
And yeah, as soon as we did, we actually felt guilty for having downtime. You think, okay, I've only got 2 weeks. You may as well do everything.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we had enough time out there to kind of experience a good bit and have a good bit of... And you had to have a bit of downtime, because we were training and it was boiling. It was minging out there sometimes, but... Yeah. But it was good to get a good mix of both.
Now, obviously you guys at Northampton train really hard, and one of the things which always comes out of England camp and people that go to England camp is how hard the training is there. Is it really that much of a step up in terms of physicality?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it is a different thing altogether, just because you cannot keep that kind of intensity up for an entire season. So if your club trained like that, your team would just burn out eventually. Do you know what I mean? Because it takes quite a big mental toll as well as it does physical. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're just playing repetitively week in, week out with your club, you pick up lots of niggles and stuff like that. So it's much harder, and you've got to kind of taper your training to fit your players and what they're feeling at the time. But with England, it's just hard and fast. Like, you're getting in, you need to be fitter than you are at club, you need to be stronger, you need to be faster, more physical. So yeah, it's just that it really is a step up.
That's a really interesting point that I never really thought about, which is a club rugby, yeah, of course you're working hard, but actually it's an element of sustainability there, which you've got to be there all year.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you could reinvent the game, would you prefer something like, I'm guessing, like a short NFL season where you build up to be in your best shape possible and then play a few extremely high-intensity games with all the high-intensity training leading up to that, or the longer sort of premiership premiership season where it's more about maintaining your body?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't really like pre-season, so I'm going to go... I prefer playing rugby than I do running, so I reckon I'll go with a long season rather than a long pre-season. I'll flip an eight pre-season.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think Eddie Jones had the Japan team in pre-season for 6 months. NFL teams are always doing pre-season. It never ends.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all right for them because they're fit. I've seen that when we went to Denver for the 2015 World Cup, we watched some of them do some fitness and it was just... pretty much light jogging.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, they don't need to be fit. Do you know what I mean? If I could just practice power and strength full time, happy days. But our pre-season just pretty much fitness.
Yeah, they actually call it gasses, don't they? And it's literally run to the 5 meter and back. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
Yeah. When you're with England then, so just going back to Japan or... particularly in the internationals and you know maybe the Lions too. Do you get a sense of how big the occasion is?
Certainly for the World Cup, just because obviously we got so far, and then we beat New Zealand, and then it was hitting home. You know that we can really do this. Something that truly is life changing. Obviously, we didn't end up doing it in the end, unfortunately, but. It was a surreal feeling that week leading up to South Africa and then the game. But I really thought we did well. We had one of the youngest teams in the competition. I think it was the youngest team to ever reach a final of the World Cup. So, I'm looking forward to the next one if I make it. And if not, looking forward to watching it.
How old are you now?
31.
Oh, you'll easily make it, mate. You'll stroll into it.
Yeah, being my prime, mate.
Exactly right. Second row basically lasts forever. Simon Shaw was 40.
Fair play. Maybe I'll make it.
Forgot what I was going to ask now. Oh, yeah. Just when you said you thought when you after the New Zealand game, you thought, we can really do it now. There weren't any doubts going into the New Zealand game.
No, there were no doubts. We knew we were going to win that, but it's just the realization of it. Do you know what I mean? Because you have to do it in order to really believe it. But I think we knew we were going to shock everyone, but we had to prove it to ourselves as well.
And what were the details about New Zealand, which you thought, yeah, actually, we'll do this?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think just our preparation in terms of the entire tournament was pretty much leading up to that game, wasn't it? Mm. And we always knew that we were going to meet New Zealand in the semi-final if and when we got there. And... We just put so much effort into it leading up to the semi-final and the final that I felt like we just didn't have a choice. We just had to go out there and put it in. We'd done all the training. We'd done all the off-field work. Everybody was on the same page. Everybody knew what their individual role was at any given time. And
But the magnitude must have surprised you.
What of winning it?
Yeah, because it wasn't just a small win, really, was it?
No, it wasn't, and it was a hell of a game of rugby to be involved in. It really was. So, I think the whole game was just a brilliant spectacle of rugby, wasn't it? And I think that it shocked a lot of people. So that was quite fun. Because there was a lot of memes going around talking about
yeah.
you know, it, not we, we were going to use Nigel Owen as an excuse when we're losing all this kind of stuff. So it's nice to, you know, put a middle finger up every now and again to that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Is there anywhere in particular when you're playing international rugby you don't like to go? I mean, I guess you guys just relish the challenge, but there's nowhere like, you know, away at Wales or away at France, and nothing really bothers you as such.
No, I wouldn't say anything really bothers. I think probably France is one of the hardest places to go and play.
Yeah.
Just because they're a completely different team at home. And they've got such good players, do you know what I mean? They've got so much talent that when they can pull it all together, they really are quite difficult to beat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, any team which can field Louis Picamoles off the bench is always going to be a handful.
Yeah, exactly.
What was he like to play with, by the way? Because he's always been one of my favorite players.
Yeah, he's obviously very French, and he didn't speak much English. But
did he not speak any English during his time at Northampton? Because I remember him
very little. I mean, we were kind of teaching him how to speak English as we went. And Vesti had been to France, so he spoke a little bit of French, so that helped him out, but. He was probably the most ridiculous player I've ever seen play in the Premiership. Like, it was. You know. There's them little weird doll things that have got like a round bottom.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't knock them over.
Yeah.
And that's what he's like. Like his ass and legs are so big, and they're so much bigger than his upper body, and he could just break tackles that. It was ridiculous, mate.
He is ridiculous. He's just He's such a strange and effective specimen.
Yeah, he is, very much. And he's powerful and he's quick. And he's relatively... I suppose he's not that fit, but...
He
was a hell of a player. Fit enough, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry to turn the conversation this way, but may as well, because of the news and whatnot. Can I ask, what do you think of... the controversy, or the so-called controversy, around Swing Low?
I had a short conversation with somebody on Twitter about this, and they basically asked me the same question. I said that I don't see what the big deal is, but I rarely do with things like this.
Yeah.
Because I don't see the point in kind of getting mad over history. Like, history is just history. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You can't change it. You can't do anything about it. You can learn from it. But I don't feel any type of way about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it really doesn't bother me. I still don't really know the history in depth about it. But obviously, because of the whole climate at the minute, everybody's digging into everything and making sure nothing's remotely racist and stuff like that. So, and if it offends some people, then you can have a discussion about it. But I don't think you should just cancel things just because a few people want it cancelled. I think you should have a discussion about it, maybe a vote or whatnot, and then you go from there. That's democracy, isn't it?
It's very difficult because first and foremost, I mean, I'm kind of like, I often feel that I just don't get upset by these things. But maybe the reason I don't get upset about these things is because it just doesn't really affect me. You know, I have no idea, you know, what I should be upset by, or, you know, like, yeah, I just don't, I just don't really care. But then I think about, maybe I should try and see it from someone else's eyes. And, you know, I'm struggling to see the controversy around that particular song. It's not saying that, I'm not lumping that in with everything else, but just in that particular case, I'm really, really struggling. And I don't really see, you know, the crowds at rugby games as a bunch of baying racists, really, if I'm honest.
Certainly not. The amount of, minority groups in the England team, and the fact that we are all, you know, adorned, and people are incredibly proud of us.
Yeah.
Because we're English, not because of anything else. Do you know what I mean? So, and certainly people aren't singing the song for any kind of racist reason. Do you know what I mean?
We'll get them.
It doesn't make sense to me, But like I said, stuff like that rarely does, mate. I just try and get on with what I can control.
Yeah, I sort of think if you talk about something enough, people start to feel uncomfortable about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, Exeter Chiefs and all the carry on there with their name never really occurred to me. But the more people talk about it, the more you kind of do get a little bit sensitized. Not sensitized. No, sensitized is the right one. Desensitized is the wrong one. And you think, oh, maybe because this conversation isn't going away, there is something to it. But again, I kind of don't think there is.
What was the Chiefs one? I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, Chief is Native American.
Yeah. So, what is it? Appropriation or something?
Yeah, exactly what it is. Cultural appropriation.
Come on.
I know. So I was followed the other day on Twitter. And this is what I have to remind myself of all the time, okay? But I was followed the other day on Twitter by Chiefs for Change Twitter account. Now, yeah. I'm automatically very suspicious of what they might want and what they are trying to do and why it's necessary. But then on the other hand, I have to remember behind the Twitter account is probably someone who loves rugby and I'd get on with very, very well. And unless we actually spoke about this, we'd probably agree on 99% of things.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I think that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
it is.
I feel like we're on that road at the minute. I think like everyone's trying to do the right thing, but I don't like highlighting. I don't see how highlighting and exaggerating our differences is going to make things better.
I think that's I think that's an amazing.
We ultimately have to find things in common, find something that we can all build towards.
Yeah.
But at the minute, it's just blame games, really. It's a weird climate.
It's a really good point, that, because I'd say one of the best reasons to play rugby, I don't mean play for the Lions and play for England like you do, but just play rugby, is actually because you get to mix with so many people that you wouldn't otherwise mix with. And I don't mean, from a racial point of view. I mean, actually, from a generational point of view. There's no other time that I have a beer with a 70-year-old. And we're all like the same thing, which is we love rugby. And that's why it upsets me so much when, half of rugby Twitter is talking about statues or something. And actually, shouldn't we just be talking about rugby? Isn't this why we're all here? This is how we all built our platform.
Yeah, so many, ages, cultures, ethnicities, all sorts of things. And it gives you something to unite around, and it gives you something in common, something to talk about. And I think that we get away from... Like, we think we're so different, do you know what I mean? People nowadays think they're so different, but they're really not. That you can always find something in common with, your fellow Englishman, as long as they enjoy being English, I guess.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm actually Welsh, and I can't say I enjoy being Welsh that much at the moment, because I can't travel back to Wales.
You don't sound too Welsh, so that's all right.
No, I lived in Manchester for too long.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but like I say, it is the great unifier. So that's I let myself down on Twitter continuously. I often think about it. If I could delete half my tweets, in fact, I might even get one of those tweet scrubbers on. Where you kind of delete every seven days, it deletes all of your history.
That's good. That is. I need to get one of them.
Yeah, because I think if someone went through these tweets, my word.
Yeah, I feel you.
Do you think do you think that sometimes you're treated unfairly on Twitter?
I don't really. It depends. Well, it depends who you ask, isn't it? If you ask me, then maybe.
Yeah.
If you ask somebody else, then they'll probably say no. But I feel like I'm saying what I'm saying on Twitter to try and open some people's minds up about certain things. Like, I certainly am very open to listen to other people and what they're saying, even if it gets quite difficult, because if you say something, it doesn't matter what you say, somebody gets offended by it. And then instead of trying to discuss it with you, they just attack you and try and point score against you. And then obviously if somebody's attacking you, you're hot. I'm just like, all right, then let's go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I'd rather just have a discussion and actually talk things through, which is hard on Twitter anyway, because you've only got a certain amount of characters and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm just trying to open people up to a different perspective, a different way of going about things, because I don't agree with how things have been, how we're going about things at the minute. Yeah, to try and make change.
It doesn't feel like the conversations we have are getting more comfortable, or the relationships that we're building are getting more comfortable. That's what I would say.
No, exactly.
I mean, one of the reasons I asked that is, I remember not so long ago, I might just put an edit marker on this in case I don't want to say it or I want to get rid of it, which I will do. I remember you said something around Christmas time. And the result of it was people started... or one person in particular, prominent within rugby, decided to do a credit search on your dad to find out if he was a director and how much he earned. And I thought, that's outrageous, actually.
Mm. Yeah, is that a Squidge guy, was it? Squidge rugby?
Yeah.
Squid, is that it?
I think it is. And this is the thing. No problem with his content. I think he's a very talented man, all the rest of it. But it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
It was quite an interesting one, because I tweeted that I don't think England is racist, a racist country, and on a whole, I don't think it is. I think a lot of people, it is classist, so there is an elitist element to England, which is undeniable in my opinion. And I think a lot of classism gets confused as racism, because they are quite similar and intertwined in a lot of ways, because black people are disproportionately in the lower working class. But that's like a whole other conversation. You know, you could talk for hours about that kind of stuff. But yeah, like I said, I don't think England is a racist society. Obviously, there is racism in it, and I think a lot of people have shunned racism and racist people, which I think is good, and it can always be improved on, although it's never going away. Do you know what I mean? I think people that talk about, like, oh, it's 2020, how they're still racist, they don't understand human psychology. Like, they don't understand that there's always going to be bad people. Like, how is it we're going to get rid of racism but we can't get rid of murderers? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and stuff like that. So there's always going to be bad people. There's always going to be ignorant people and people who want to hurt others, either through what they say or their actions. So I was saying that, and naturally what people do nowadays, because I'm black and I'm saying it, they want to discredit my blackness. So they want to make it seem like I think this way because of X, Y, and Z, and that X, Y, and Z to him was to say my dad was rich and I was obviously brought up in the middle class, which is quite interesting, because everybody asks opinions of, say Maro, for example.
Yeah.
And his views on everything are very different to mine, but he went to Harrow. He is middle class.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I came from working class. I wasn't dirt poor. I shouldn't say dirt poor.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know what I mean? I didn't have money. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I wasn't on food stamps or anything like that.
Yeah.
But people, because I think how I think, and it's not the narrative that everybody wants to go with, they try and discredit you and find a way to make your voice not worthy to listen to. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think the astounding thing about that logic would be, if I was a true racist, if I really hated you because of the colour of your skin, I don't think I'd care how much your dad earned. It just wouldn't make any difference. And that's why I found it so outrageous that someone would go and, you know, say, well, Courtney's obviously from wealth, and to prove that he doesn't know, what it is to be a black man, I've done a credit search on his father. I mean, that is just, yeah. I think it's
not only done a credit search, but got it wrong.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Got it completely wrong. But that's the climate we're dealing with at the minute, mate. It's, you know, conservative-minded people, which is most of the people in the country, are being silenced at the minute and made to feel like they're bad people.
And it's very interesting. The conversations you have on WhatsApp are very different to the conversations which you have on Twitter. And the way I look at it is the people that I interact with on Twitter are pretty much all good people. I wouldn't ever bother interacting with someone who I didn't think was a genuinely good person, but we disagree. I just think that probably on Twitter I treat them worse than I would in real life, and probably ruder and probably more obnoxious than I would be in real life.
Yeah.
And I think they're probably the same, and it doesn't foster a good conversation. Nah.
Twitter's a horrible place, and it does make you just want to point score rather than actually have a conversation. So I've decided, and I've started working with the Centre for Social Justice.
Oh, yeah.
On projects around family and the importance of it, and then race relations in all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to be working with them guys. I'm also working directly with members of government ministers, the Minister of Equalities and things like that. And
who is the Minister for Equality at the moment?
I'll tell you in a second.
Tell me about how your link with the Centre for Social Justice came about.
It was actually after I put the tweet up about the family. And then they got in contact, or they got my number off Delalio, mm-hmm. and got in touch with me and just said, look, what you're saying is an issue at the minute, and it's something that if you're serious about making change, and it's something we need to talk about. So I was obviously very keen to help out. But yeah, that whole tweet thing was a bit of an eye opener for me, because I didn't even really put too much thought into it. I mean, I probably didn't word it as I would have now, knowing the reaction it got.
Yeah. Interest. What was the reaction like from your side? Because I read it, and you only see a snippet, because obviously I'm not looking at your notifications and it lighting up. Just how was that from your side?
It was what it was. I mean, I know what Twitter's like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't really care if I'm getting mocked, because I don't know these people. Mm. Like the people who know me, and you saying that, oh, I'm classist or I'm this and that, I don't care what you think, because you don't actually know who I am. You just see my tweet and jump to an assumption that I'm some kind of person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wasn't that bothered. It was annoying that people kept tagging my sponsors and trying to get me fired.
Yeah, of course.
Which is, I find it interesting that the people that feel like they hold the moral standard for society would be more than willing to try and ruin somebody's life over the difference of an opinion.
Yeah, this is the part which gets me raging. I hold back on insults occasionally, but for people that do that, I just wonder if they think, like, it's not necessarily Courtney Laws that you're attacking, and if this is successful that you hurt, it's your four children, it's your wife, it's your ability to pay your mortgage. Over what? Was it worth it? How much do you how nasty do you have to be to want that to affect not just you, but your whole family?
Yeah. Wrong think. For what you consider wrong think, just because it's an opinion that you don't like to hear. It's a really weird thing to think is a moral thing to do, and they think it's a moral thing to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, again, that is where we're at the minute. But yeah, like I was saying, I certainly would have worded it differently, but I think people they didn't see what I actually said. They just saw what they thought I said.
Do you know what? I did the same thing. I did exactly the same thing.
How they interpreted it, because I genuinely thought what he did was a good thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm working with a club to distribute the meals, the free meals, because I think, especially in this climate after the pandemic, people need support. And I genuinely thought it was a good thing to do. So I said, well done. And then I said, and I thought this would be obvious, that the less people we've got that need these, the more there is to go around.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So maybe we could get to a more of a core issue of it in a lot of cases. And it's not every case. I wasn't talking to people who have, you know, lost loved ones or have lost it, or, you know, are married and have lost their job and whatnot. Mm. I was talking to the people who, you know, kind of may not have the knowledge, may not know how much children cost, or, you know, the emotional toll it has to have a children, or that what the best condition to bring children up in terms of environment. Do you know what I mean? It's quite hard to explain, but yeah.
It's very hard to explain, because what you do is you leave yourself open to someone saying, right, well, Courtney thinks you can only have children if you're married, only have children if you're rich. And that's not...
Or if you're rich. I was I talk about how much money you need? I was just saying be financially secure as in have a job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or think about, you know, think about it. And that doesn't... Again, what I found so amazing about the so-called... I mean, it's not even controversial. You ask 99% of people on the street and they'd probably, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you wouldn't advise the people attacking you would never advise their family members to not plan before having a child. But because of the judgment aspect of it, and we should never judge and all the rest of it, they found what you said incredibly offensive. But I think if they just step back and he said, you know, what is it Courtney actually said here? Not what do I think he said, not what do I think maybe his underlying politics are, not any of that, just what did he say? You'd struggle to find anyone that said, "Yeah, I would never tell a family member to plan before having a child." And some people, and when it does happen in that way, it's unfortunate. But guess what? You know, if you have a family, it is easier to deal with. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, I know, man. I know. I think I honestly think also it was poor timing from me, certainly, and it was poor. I suppose it was unfortunate that I kind of got dragged into what Katie Hopkins had said.
Oh no.
And I didn't I don't follow her, and I didn't realize she'd said anything about it. And people were comparing what I said to what she said. And I was like, well, that's clearly not the same, but they're kind of conflating us. You know what I mean? And I didn't realize also that he was from a single parent household.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have posted it if I'd known that.
Yeah,
but I just saw that he'd done a good thing, and I thought I'd congratulate him on it, and you know, have a suggestion of what we can do to help people.
Yeah, now I actually think the way you handle yourself on Twitter, and you know, the things that you think, things that you say, not only are broadly correct. In fact, I think they are correct. I agree with most of them, but I also think it is taking increasing courage, and you're taking an increasing risk by doing it.
Yes, I am. I want to help. You've got to sacrifice. Do you know what I mean? I can't just, that's why I'm working with people. Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to make change. I can't just chat about it on Twitter, even though maybe I can help people on Twitter that, you know, aren't self-aware in some type of way, and make them see that, that there are things you can do to help yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because at the minute, it's like doomsday. Like, no, everybody's just, man, there's nothing I can do. It's just, but you can. And that's what I'm trying to make people say. And I haven't, and I'll admit, I haven't gone the right way about it, especially towards the start of it, because I was quite annoyed with everybody saying stuff that I didn't agree with. So I would just try and point score. But certainly, like in the last few weeks and months, I'm trying to actually convince people that, you know, you can change your own circumstance if you make good decisions, you put your mind to it. It's hard to get it across at the minute.
It's sort of linked, isn't it, to what we said right at the start of the podcast, which is, you know, the things you know when you're in your mid-30s compared to what you know in your mid-20s are astounding. Just that alone means that you can dish out some form of advice, and it'll evolve again by the time you're 45 and 55 and 65 and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, well, my dad's conservative, and he moved over here when he was 12 from Jamaica, and he gets a lot of crap for it, obviously in the black community, which is, but he doesn't care because he knows what he's saying is true, and obviously I'm the same. I've been playing for England since I was 20, so I've been under a lot of pressure and scrutiny from a very young age, and I think that's helped me mature a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And I obviously everybody that feels kind of way can see, you know, think that what they feel is right, but I base almost all of my kind of conclusions and philosophies and responsibility on logic and rather than emotion. And obviously it's important to be aware of people's emotions, but at the end of the day, emotions cloud your judgment.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't come at things from an emotional standpoint. I think you've got to look at, you know, the statistics. You've got to look at what people are saying and what is affecting them. And if what they're saying is true, which it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of learning, doesn't it? And I've certainly learned a lot since I started, you know, tweeting and listening to people on Twitter and stuff like that. And my position on certain things has definitely changed. But that's the whole point of it. If I can change my position, then so can you. And, you know, we can help each other.
Yeah. You know, you say a lot of good things there, particularly around the logic thing. And I think, you know, say if there was some systemic reason that one group is disadvantaged compared to the next, that's awful. Everyone agrees that that's awful. But if we all, you know, if you then acted as an individual to do all the things possible to make your life as good as it could be, you might fail. But at least you've got, you know, at least you're a little bit further down the road. At least you've given yourself a chance to succeed. And that's how I see it. You know, it's good advice.
No, you're right.
Good advice. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't.
No, you're right, mate. There's a lot, mate. There's an absolute ton of stuff to, you know, that you could chat about in terms of this side of it. And I think there's a lot for both sides to learn, because at the minute we've got one side berating the other side and blaming them for everything. And then the other side is shutting down and going, how can you blame this all on me? I'm not listening to what you say. But you need to listen to each other. Which is where we're failing at the minute, because there are things that do hurt. Not necessarily, well, there are things that hurt black people in this country, one of them being class, but that's not necessarily tied directly to race. But there are obviously things around race, implications and ignorances, and just the fact that some people haven't even met black people and a black person in England.
Yeah.
So they're going to have certain ignorances about it, which is, and things like the fact that I think a lot of the English see the black community, they perceive them a certain way, but they don't realize as in a bad light, but they don't realize that things like crime are down to being in poverty, not necessarily culture. And while I think that there are certainly things that the black community can improve in culture, which will help them get out of poverty, I think it's other people need to understand that it's not because they're black that they're criminals. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This was evident in terms of what they had in Glasgow when it was mainly young white youth that was running around stabbing people. Do you know what I mean? So,
yes. And exactly.
There's things to learn on both sides. And then, mate, I don't want to make this into like a controversial thing, so I won't go any more into it. But but I would just say that there is certainly things that we can do in the black community to help ourselves. And there's definitely things that the government and English people can do to understand, you know, what black people are going through and how they can help. Yeah. But feeling sorry for yourself and feeling sorry for others is not going to help.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, maybe feeling sorry for others can help. I mean, maybe a bit more compassion, maybe a bit more understanding can help. Feeling sorry for yourself is a no-go. And I worked up in Oldham for 5 years, I believe, six years. And when that is legitimately, if not the poorest town in the UK, one of them. And I can completely back up what you say, which is, you know, it's mostly socioeconomic. If we want to help people, we've got to help and look at it through a socioeconomic and class lens, because that's a really difficult part.
I feel like we've gone through a period where there's really not much in Western society, but there's really no other society that's as free and as diverse and has less to worry about. Like, poverty in England is not poverty.
It's more compared comfortable. Do you know, I'm sorry, I would have to disagree with that. And reason is, like, I've seen some of the poorer states in the north of England.
Okay.
You're all right, actually. No, sorry, I've got to say, it's a very complex one. I think poverty can largely be relative. So it's the relative, it's sort of like the relative standard of living compared to the average. You're 100% right to say poverty in Oldham is not the same as poverty in India. You are 100% right to say that. But I also think it's not necessarily the right measure we should be looking at. It should almost be like poverty relative to the average standard of living, if that makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough. Certainly. I suppose what I was saying is, comparatively to anywhere else you were living, there's very few places on earth that you're going to be better off in than in most Western countries.
Or times in history.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, that kind of old saying whereabouts, what does it go like? It's the one about, strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make hard times. And then hard times make strong men.
I've not heard that. That's a very, very good saying.
Yeah, I feel like that's just part of just humanity going round. Like, there's nothing really, there's no external threat to fight, so we're going to fight each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do wonder if it's a case. Well, I wonder if it's a case of humans need something to fight against. I mean, it could be just as simple as that. You know,
it unifies you, doesn't it? It gives you a common goal.
Yeah, maybe we just want to be part of a group, and if that group means that we have to chastise and fight against, I don't know, our neighbours for the wrong things that they think, maybe that's the way forward. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. But I don't know how this. I can't see where this is going to turn round at the minute.
I can't see anything good coming from it. It is basically how I see it.
Can I see anything good coming from it? Not unless people start actually discussing things again, which is not what they're doing. I feel like people just live in echo chambers nowadays, and they're scared to get out of them because they might be proven wrong.
Yeah.
And everybody's so intent on, they're scared of being wrong, do you know what I mean? And they're intent on being right, and they'll do anything to prove it. Yeah, do you know what I mean? But
being wrong is scary. You know, being wrong, I mean, imagine if we were proved wrong, for instance, that, you know, for instance, you're not successful because of your hard work, you're successful because you're lucky, and that was proved. It'd be terrifying, you know. It'd be terrifying to me if someone proved to me that free markets don't work. It would upend my whole existence. So I can empathize with them in a way, which is, it is a scary prospect of being wrong.
It is. And it is subjective, being right and wrong, because two people can think exactly the same thing, and one of them sees it as a good thing and one of them sees it as a bad thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's quite, we're all just different, and that's why I'm trying to find ways of getting people to, you know, find things in common, find things that they can get behind, rather than obsess over like differences and things that may or may not happen, may or may not be true, just anything, you know, divisive things. There's so much division now, and I think most of it is probably pushed by the media.
I think so.
Yeah, the thing that I find most interesting, because I try and listen to other people on their side. I think it's quite interesting that both sides, right and left, feel like the media is against them.
Yeah. Mate, I'm going to have to try and think of a way to stitch up a question now to make this interview sound good. So anyway, I think we both agree that Twitter might not be the best form of communication between people. How would you like to see the discussion change in the future? And we'll just have that question just to wrap this up, because I feel that we might go down a rabbit hole here, mate.
Yeah, I know. We're having a good old chat. I'd like to see people just be more open-minded, both sides of the argument. Mm. And not be as worried about being wrong. I want to see people actually try and find common ground rather than try and be right.
Yeah.
And I think that is how we're going to get some progress.
I think those are very, very wise words. Now, before I let you go, I can't let you go without giving me a few predictions for the rest of the season. You'll be back in action soon. Give me a prediction. Yes. Are you going to win the Premiership final?
Of course, mate. No doubt.
Who do you think you'll be beating, and what's the score? Oh, actually, haven't you got a European semi as well?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with all that now.
Yeah, to be honest. It's been announced.
Very good.
There's a weekend, so you'll be doing that as well.
Oh, great. Well, we'll go and win that as well. I think in terms of Prem, Exeter are always there or thereabouts, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we need to find a way to sort that out.
Well, I think, if you beat Exeter in the final, I think you'll need to go through Sale as well. So good luck with that as well.
Thank you.
Excellent. Where can we find you on Twitter, Instagram, those sort of places?
I'm BigCourts89 on Instagram. And then it's Courtney_Laws on Twitter.
Fantastic. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it, and we should do this again soon.
Mate, we will, yeah. Sounds good. We'll when things cool down, we might have a bit more of a chat.
Excellent, mate. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Oh, mate. No worries.
Have you guys got another date up in the AJ Bell soon? Or have you played in the AJ Bell this season?
No.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.